hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and fought and died to be. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought or die to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side me, running down with life, I'm fighting in a fought or die to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Here's some interesting common sense about one of the very worrisome trends that's occurring in many countries in the West, especially Canada, and that is the purchase of considerable parts of our industry, particularly in the energy and high tech, by Red China. This was actually warned about 20 years ago in a document called the Sidewinder Report. That was a joint report by the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, our spies, and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. And it said the biggest security threat to Canada was Communist China. It mentioned how it would try to worm its way into our politics to buy politicians. And actually, it's not that hard. Buying a politician, the really vulnerable time is at the nomination. Because most ridings in this country, federal and provincial, are relatively safe. They're not swing ridings. A small number are, but most elections are decided in a relatively small number of ridings, depending on the province or whether it's a federal or a provincial election. Most ridings are fairly predictable, that they will go to one party or the other. In many ridings, if you can get the party nomination, you are pretty certain of winning the election. So the vulnerable time, or let's say the opportunistic time, to buy a politician is at the nomination. And they warned about that. And they also warned about Red Chinese efforts to take over significant chunks of key parts of our economy, like telecommunications and energy. And they have been doing that. Now, here is a good column that appeared, or parts of a column that appeared recently in the National Post, which I think is really worthwhile. For years, the Liberal Party establishment and its friends in the Canadian Council of Chief Executives and the Canada-China Business Council have mocked Canadians who have taken the trouble to point out that China's state-owned enterprises are not the fictional profit-driven to their core operations that Margaret Cornish, that's Trudeau's senior advisor on China, going into the 2015 election, claimed them to be. Trudeau himself was an ardent champion of the China National Offshore Oil Corporation's $15.1 billion takeover of Daylight Energy and its $4.65 billion purchase of a big chunk of Syncrude. That's one of the big developers of the tar sands up in northern Alberta. And CNOOC, C-N-O-O-C, $2.34 billion gobbling over Opt Canada and on and on. Hey, their corporation is like any other, Trudeau said. Canada should be open to the world and on and on. Well, they're not. They never were. And nowadays, China's state-owned enterprises don't even pretend to be anything less than the Chinese Communist Party, the party's instruments of overseas acquisitions policy they were all along. These supposedly independent companies in China. all answer to the Communist Party. This has never been a secret, except to people, pro-red Chinese people like the trust fund kid and his father before. Trudeau Sr. was a great admirer of Red China and actually went there in a time when very, very few Westerners were allowed in the very late 50s. And he came back and with his sidekick, Jacques Hébert, wrote a book called Deux Innocents en Chine, or Two Innocents in China. Well, they weren't innocents. And although they wandered around China, they didn't seem to notice any of the massive human rights violations or the wholesale impoverishment of the Chinese people caused by the erroneously or misleadingly named Great Leap Forward. Anyway, Chinese corporations are not primarily profit-driven. That may be part of their motivation, but they are primarily instruments of Chinese state power. And they have an interest in buying up strategic parts of Western countries' economies and as well, to get their feet on the ground to steal. Because the Red Chinese are notorious espionage practitioners, particularly economic espionage. They're thieves. And they're technology thieves. this article continues. The corporate boards of Peking's state-owned enterprises were always subject to directives from the corporation's Communist Party committees. Peking's political objectives supersede any considerations about profit. The political objectives first, profit second. A new directive which came into effect August the 1st requires the party committee's powers to be written into the enterprise's articles of incorporation. So there's no doubt now, it isn't just certain security experts saying this, it's actually part of the written record, part of the articles of incorporation of these Chinese supposedly independent companies. More than 30 of Peking's state-owned enterprises listed in Hong Kong, including Sinopec and CNOOC, have already amended their incorporation documents to place the Communist Party at the pinnacle of their corporate structures. Communist Party rules, not profit, the party. The new control rules also apply to nominally private Chinese corporations vesting party committees with vetting authority in overseas investment decisions, foreign exchange matters, and dividend distribution. and the requirement to formally empower internal Communist Party committees is now being extended to foreign companies operating in China. Important. The dummies, and that's the best you can say about them, the dummies, imagine, if Canadian companies could get into China, they're going to make a lot of money. And they'll still have Canadian values. Wrong. They probably won't make a lot of money because of the prejudice and barriers put up against foreigners. But even if they do, they will not be practicing Canadian values. If you enter into a joint venture with a Chinese-owned enterprise to do business in China, that's often the only way in, then you better be prepared to facilitate the establishment of an internal Communist Party committee to tell you how to behave. That's right. That will apply to foreigners too. Last week, Samsung Electronics and Nokia both confirmed to the Reuters news agency that they have complied and Communist Party units have already been established in their Chinese operations. It's that they answer to the Red Chinese government, not to their overseas shareholders. There's an old saying, and it's exceedingly true of the Red Chinese, if you're going to sup with the devil, you'd better have a very long spoon indeed. Well, global warming then. Surely China is serious about that. Environmental Minister Catherine McKenna has praised Peking to the skies for its innovations in clean power and its move away from coal-powered electrical generation. So has the Center for American Progress, a lavishly funded Democratic Party think tank. And talking points outfit. China's indeed going green, the center gushed last May. The nation is on track to over-deliver on the emissions reductions commitments it put forward under the Paris Climate Agreement. Except it isn't, says this National Post column. China is now the world's largest emitter of greenhouse gas. So all the Paris Climate Accord enthusiasts were happily patting Peking on the back last January when the China National Energy Administration announced that more than 100 planned coal plants would not get the go-ahead after all. But as the German environmental research group Urgewald has pointed out, all Peking did was expand its carbon footprint elsewhere. Chinese companies are now opening up ground for at least 700 coal projects offshore, mostly in Africa, but also in Iran, Pakistan, and Indonesia. Stay glued to the YouTube videos of the vulgar demagogue who sluts. Extremely good information about the exceeding unreliability of Communist China. I was talking to a great friend today, a long-time fellow who's very knowledgeable about the Internet, and he was telling me part of the story of the recent woes that have afflicted Daily Stormer. Now, I've mentioned this before, but it's well worth mentioning again. We are involved in a desperate war with the enemies of free speech, many of them corporate, like Google and GoDaddy, many of them responding to Jewish and probably deep state pressure as well. This war has heated up since the protests in Charlottesville back in August. Deep state got a big shaking. We're shaken by the fact so many people, white nationalists, showed up to these protests. That they were young, and I think this is what most shocked them. Young militant whites. These are people whose parents. And whose parents' generation and their generation were supposed to have had their brains well and truly scrubbed. They were supposed to be indoctrinated with diversity and equality and all the other garbage. And but it hadn't worked. These are not old geezers from my generation who fought the good fight in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. No, this is a new generation, and I think this really had them spooked. So retribution came swiftly. As you know, other Confederate statues were removed. And many nationalist websites are being shut down in the case of Daily Stormer. But what was done was their domain name was taken from them. When you go to search for it, dailystormer.org, you're not directed there anymore. So they had to change location. They went first to Russia, but I guess Zionist pressure put pressure on Russia. That lasted a couple of days. Then they went to another location I'm not quite sure of. Then they went to Albania. Now things are a little bit loosey-goosey in Albania, and I think that lasted a week, and now they're somewhere else. And some of this technical material is a little bit beyond what I'm able to explain, but there's a battle going on. And the same with Stormfront. And Stormfront is in the process of getting back up online. We're going to have to fight these battles. And my colleague and I were talking about another pressure point, and that's YouTube. A great deal of education goes on over YouTube. Some of the young people I have met in the past year or so, in their 20s, or even younger. I think of the Young of Alien. Now, there's a girl who was entirely self-taught over the internet. She didn't have a mentor. She was not a member of a group, or at least not a group that met like our group does in Toronto and other cities across Canada. She was entirely educated over the internet. And that's possible because of the large volume of good material. And I'd like to think that our program here is part of that. And the work done by the Knights Party, and the work done by the American Freedom Party, and so many other good people. The Daily Stormer, Stormfront, Amran, and V there. And of course, I'm leaving a lot of people out, not deliberately, but there just is so much good work out there and good stuff. Well, the enemies of free speech are now frantically flailing around trying to beat this rebellion down. It won't work, but we will be in for some difficult times. Here's a cartoon that I put up on my Facebook, and if you want to find me on Facebook, it's Frederick Fromm, not Paul Fromm, for reasons that are rather complicated. Your lab tests show that you're doing fairly well for a 65-year-old, says the doctor to a patient. Fairly well. Do you think I'll live to be 80? Do you smoke tobacco or drink beer or wine? No, I'm not doing drugs either. Do you eat ribeye steaks or barbecued ribs? No, I think all red meat is very unhealthy. Do you spend a lot of time in the sun, like golfing, sailing, hiking, or bicycling? No, I don't. Do you gamble, drive fast cars, or have a lot of sex? No, I don't do any of those things. And then the doctor says, then why the hell would you want to live to be 80? Oh, yes. Okay. Well, there's an excellent column by Conrad Black, and he's a bit of a neocon, but he's a first-rate thinker, was a publisher of the National Post in Canada for some years. He's a lord in England, was raised to the true peerage. He was once the publisher of the Chicago Sun-Times. His company, Hollinger, was hauled before the U.S. courts in what was really an incredibly vicious attack. And he's done a book about that, and he's a great writer. And his book points out that the politicization of the American justice system. That in many court cases, once you're charged, your doom is sealed quite often. And it's only it becomes a matter of who can negotiate the best settlement. That you're going to be punished, that's a foregone conclusion. It's now just a matter of how bad it will be. And, of course, if you can rat somebody else out, so much the better. It has nothing to do with justice. I'm going to leave that until right after the break. I want to thank a friend who sent this to me. It's a it was a poster in the Durham schools, and it said, Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario. Durham is the county just east of Toronto, including such cities as Pickering, Whitby, and Ajax. LGGBDTTTIQQAAPP. Now, that might sound like the letters that would appear on one of those charts that you're asked to read when you go to the dentist. And is the eye doctor. Wrong quack. The eye doctor. If you can't read it perfectly, well, then the doctor will put a lens in front of your eye and ask you, is this better or worse? Give you another lens. Is this better or worse? You know, is A better than B? And so on and so on. But anyway, this has nothing to do with that. This is the LGGBDTTTIQQAAPP Inclusiveness Training. Oh, my God. And it took place on June the 6th at 603 Palace Street in Whitby. This array of letters is explained. Lesbian, gay, gender queer, bisexual, demisexual, don't ask me what that is, transgendered, transsexual, two-spirit, now that's what Native Indians supposedly called homosexuals, intersex, don't ask me, queer, okay, questioning, in other words, you're confused, asexual, it looks like all is allies, pansexual, I don't know what that is, and polyamorous. Well, polyamorous is actually doesn't mean, it's not a sexual orientation. It simply means having multiple partners. It's within a marriage. In other words, polygamy. It's not a sexual orientation, but okay. This inclusiveness training, what would you be teaching elementary school teachers that for? This is mind-bending insanity. This freakish catering to weirdos has no place in our public schools. Parents should revolt. Yes, quite frankly, they should go down to the Board of Education and ask, who authorized this? And is he about to, this alphabet soup of genders and sexual mixed upness, is that person going to resign? Why should there be any inclusiveness training? It's not up to the teacher to try to assist a child. Now, these are elementary school teachers, so these would be up to grade 8. So up to the time a kid is 14. Should teachers be teaching, should they be into this gender inclusiveness or inclusiveness of all these weirdos? And I mean, in some cases, this is mental illness. This isn't even a legitimate sexuality. The messed up, the mixed up. Should they be included? No, they should not be included. They should not be encouraged. I got some interesting comments on my little posting there. I'm trying to read them to you here. Kimberly says, if my kid brought this home, I'd probably die laughing. Sharon in Hawaii says, what happened to vouchers? And what she means by this, one way to deal with the weirdos and oddballs and cultural Marxists that so often infest the public education system is to offer parents an alternative. Okay, your taxes pay for education. Usually you're limited to the public school system, which may have been taken over by the cultural Marxists or assorted weirdos, and which is unresponsive to your lobbying. your only alternative, there are two. One, a private school, which means that you pay twice, once through your taxes and once through fees. Or third option is homeschooling, which is not necessarily a viable option for everybody. But a better or another idea was that the jurisdiction, let's say the state or the province, calculates what it will cost to educate a student in its jurisdiction. Let's, for a round figure, say $7,000. Well, each parent is given a voucher for $7,000 for each of their school-aged children. The voucher can only be presented to an educational institution. It could be a public school, it could be a private school, it could be a religious private school, it could be a Montessori school, whatever. The parent shops around for the education system that is most responsive to his or her religious and educational goals, and then presents that voucher to the school in choice. It might, let's say, be a Christian school, and the parent takes the $7,000 voucher and gives it to the school, and the school will teach that student for that year. This puts real power into the hands of the parents. Well, of course, the education establishment, I used to be part of it, hate that. Oh my gosh, they hate that. Parents have a choice. We don't want them to have a choice. We want to, we want to force them to. Yeah. Anyway, I've got some other comments. Linda Mortal says, is this a joke? It's not a joke, I'm afraid, Linda. Alex says, no parent, what? No paranormal? Among the long list of sexualities. Andrew in Etobicoke says, you've got to be kidding me, what a joke. Sorry, not kidding you, unfortunately. I wish I had been, but was not. And Andrea says she totally agrees, and Christine says, I think the Red Sea pedestrians are responsible for this crap. And I agree with her. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you in just a few minutes. I'm going to take a short musical interlude here. And why don't we start off with song by by David Allan Coe, Long-Haired Redneck. Yeah, he's a long-haired redneck and one of the original Outlaws with Willie Nelson. And we have to...
Tennis presents mind-blowing pure fiber facts. Today's topic, fast...
I will try it again.
Country DJs knows that I'm an outlaw. They'd never come to see me in this dive, where bikers stare at cowboys who are laughing at the hippies who are praying they'll get out of here alive. Loudmouth in the corner's getting to me, talking about my earrings and my hair. I guess he ain't read the signs that say I've been to prison. Someone ought to warn him before I knock him off his chair. 'Cause my long hair just can't cover up my redneck. I've won every fight I've ever fought, and I don't need some turkey telling me that I ain't country, saying I ain't worth a damn dog ticket that he bought. 'Cause I can sing all them songs about Texas, and I still do all the sad ones that I know. They tell me I look like Merle Haggard and sound a lot like David Allan Coe. The barmaid in the last town that we played in knew the words words to every song I'd wrote. She said, Jimmy Rabbit turned her on to my last album, just about the time the jukebox broke. Yeah, Johnny Cash helped me get out of prison, long before Rodriguez stole that goat. I've been the Rhinestone Cowboy for so long I can't remember, and I can do you every song Hank Williams ever wrote. And I can sing all them songs about Texas. And I still do all the sad ones that I know. I can't help it, I look like Merle Haggard, and I sound a lot like David Allen Cole, but the country DJs all think I'm an outlaw. They'd never come to see me in this dive, where bikers stare at cowboys who are laughing at the hippies who are praying they'll get out of here alive. The loudmouth in the corner's getting to me, talking about my earrings and my hair.
And that's David Allen Cole. Long-haired redneck, and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on White ResistanceRadio.com. I'll play another tune here for the musical interlude, and I think I played this one before, but I think it's really good. This is a duet, and some of these country duets are really good, and this is the lovely Patti Loveless, a coal miner's daughter from Pikeville, Kentucky, and Vince Gill. Patti and Vince, My Kind of Woman, My Kind of Man. This is Paul Fromm, and this is White Resistance Radio.
But this is, we're going to sing you a song that we just released, and it's very reminiscent of what Porter and Dolly used to record together, and George and Tammy and Conway and Loretta, and tons of other great duets, but those three are extremely special, the records that they made and inspired folks like Patti and I, and hopefully this will follow suit with what all the rest of our collaborations have done.
You don't need diamonds, a big fancy car. Oh, hey.
And Vince Gill, My Kind of Woman, My Kind of Man. And I'm going to play a song I hope you'll like. This is Maryland, My Maryland. We were talking about this on this show a couple of nights ago, and also on the other show I do, which is The Trump Phenomenon on Republic Broadcasting. That's republicbroadcasting.org, and it's The Trump Phenomenon. I'm a co-host there. Is on every week, day, night at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time for an hour. And this song reflects the fact that Maryland was under martial law through most of the War of Yankee Aggression. It wanted to join the South. Maryland was very pro-South, and Abraham Lincoln shot and killed protesters in Maryland and put the state under martial law. This is Tennessee Ernie Ford and Maryland, My Maryland, the state song of the state of Maryland. And listen to the words. They're really powerful.
The despot's heel is shore.
Maryland, my Maryland,
his torch is at thy temple door.
Maryland, my Maryland,
avenge the patriotic gore that flecked the streets of Baltimore, and be the battle queen of yore.
Maryland, my Maryland.
Thou wilt not cower in the dust, trust. Remember Howard's warlike thrust,
and all thy slumberers with the just. Maryland, my Maryland.
Dear Mother Bird, the tyrant's chain.
Maryland, my Maryland.
Virginia should not call in vain.
Maryland, my Maryland.
She meets her sisters on the plain. Sick temper, 'tis the proud refrain that baffles minions back on main.
Maryland, my Maryland. Arise, arise in man.
Maryland, Maryland, my Maryland.
That's a great singer of yesteryear, Tennessee Ernie Ford, also known for his many gospel songs. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. As I was mentioning, Conrad Black, actually Lord Black of Cross Harbor. And this is a very interesting article, Assault from Within. Our society is under attack, from Antifa to vilifying Sir John A. Macdonald. That's in Canada. Both Canada and the United States are in different ways enduring an assault on their national legitimacy from within. The incessant agitation by the Canadian Native community, now focused on, in Stalinist terms, the repression of John A. Macdonald, is essentially an attempt to delegitimize the entire settlement and political organization of this country. Delegitimize us, the founding settler people. My words, not his. And to delegitimize the political organization of this country by those who arrived here starting in the 16th century. As I've written many times before, says Conrad Black, the natives arrived here approximately 20,000 or more years before the Europeans did. Well, I wouldn't agree, but that's an anthropological dispute. I believe the Salutrians, who were European, arrived here before, or perhaps at the same time as the natives, but or the Indians, but that's a different matter. But their civilization, that's the Indians, in the 16th century, was at least 5,000 years behind that of Europe by any reasonable measurement of the maturity of a culture or economy of a society. And the natives were not sufficiently numerous or attached to a durable place of residence to be said to occupy the territory of what's now Canada. They were nomads. They wandered hither and yon. The arrival of the Europeans was more legitimate than the arrival of the Frankish and Teutonic and other tribes and people were in Central and Western Europe at the end of the Roman Empire. But the Europeans who came to the New World, whatever their behavioral shortcomings, were gentler and more tolerant of natives than were the Huns, Vandals, Saracens, and others who flooded into Western Europe and killed, enslaved, absorbed, or assimilated most of the people who'd been preceded them there. There is not, even in the most eccentric circles, an agitation today for the restoration of the rights of the Picts or Etruscans, nor any suggestion that they wish to live as they did 2,000 years ago. The effort to demote MacDonald on the $10 Canadian bill and the clamor to take his name off schools and highways and buildings is the personification of the cheeky and outrageous effort to delegitimize the entire European presence in this country. It is dismally unsurprising that the initial effort to portray MacDonald as a genocidist by self-serving native mythmakers, seconded by adult judges like the present Chief Justice of our Supreme Court, Beverly McLaughlin, has been taken up by our underworked, over-pensioned Ontario Elementary School Teachers Union, who bear the chief responsibility for reducing the collective IQ of this country in the last 40 years. And yes, the vile, vile education system in which I once participated bears a big responsibility for the fact that the Johnny, as a good American friend of mine wrote, Johnny can't think. Nah, it used to be Johnny can't read. Now Johnny can't think. MacDonald was the principal creator of the only transcontinental bicultural parliamentary confederation in the history of the world, one of the chief authors of cooperation between French and English-speaking Canadians, the man who assured the right to vote for Native people, and someone who had many allies in the Native communities, such as Chief Crowfoot, the Black Chief, Blackfoot Chief, who supported MacDonald in the Métis, and that was a mixed race, or half-breeds, who revolted in Saskatchewan and Manitoba in 1885. The effort to discredit him officially, that's MacDonald, is an effort to marginalize all of us morally. If the founder of the country was illegitimate, we all are. Every stage of this sequence of anti-historical upheavals of fact is nonsense. The manner in which Canadians, as a political society, have allowed our right to be and govern here to be impugned by people upon whom we have lavished scores of billions of dollars. That's the Indians. To no discernible purpose, other than the enrichment of a lot of chiefs, is an epic example of a people who so lack the moral confidence in their basic collective rights that they can be blackmailed by people who have grievances, certainly, but whose greatest modern grievances are not against us, but against their own leaders. The non-native people in this country have not exploited and misgoverned the native people remotely as thoroughly as of some of their own leaders, yes, who live in obscene luxury, pay themselves salaries larger than that of the Prime Minister of Canada to manage a band of Indians, sometimes fewer than 1,000 people. Hello? Hi. Yes, can I call you back in 10 minutes? I'm doing my show. Ripped off their own people, which is one of the reasons that the 631 Indian chiefs so fiercely fought against a measure by the last government, the Conservatives under Stephen Harper, which was called the Accountability Act, where they would at least have to publicly file audited reports of their expenses. Oh, no, that's interfering with our sovereignty. Bollocks. And that's what should have been said from the beginning. What do you mean sovereignty? You're not sovereign nations as you claim. You're parasites off the Canadian taxpayer. And the Canadian taxpayer and your own wretched subjects have the right to know how you're spending that money. And Conrad Black continues that the last few comments were mine, actually, not Conrad Black's. In the United States, for obvious reasons, the problem is more profound and on a greater scale. More than 150, well, he talks there about, after the emancipation of the Negroes, and more than 50 years after the end of segregation, and of the practical, he goes on to say, after two terms of an African or a Negro president and the passage of most African Americans into the middle class, the United States is still riven by racial, violent, and anti-white movements, including the self-styled anti-fascist or Antifa and the Black Lives Matter crowd, some of whose fellow travelers have targeted white police officers for murder. And that's right. Because the agitations of these extremist movements are cross-threaded with the half-completed takeover of the federal government by the populist Trump movement, still opposed by traditional Republican and Democratic factions, the never-Trumpers who dominate the national media have partially overlooked the odious and militantly racist nature of Antifa and the Black Lives Matter. And the Democrats have sailed close to this satanic wind in their eagerness to portray Trump as a Nazi sympathizer and to whitewash Antifa and Black Lives Matter and others as righteous advocates of free speech and assembly. They're not Black Lives Matter. I mean, Antifa, LN Black Lives Matter, are militant opponents of free speech, or that's of any speech other than the speech they approve of. The FBI warned 3 days before the Charlottesville riots that there would be a battle, and the Democrat governor and the mayor facilitated the violence premeditatedly, presumably to blame President Trump for the deterioration of civility in the country. Of course, the jackal media and its witless Canadian echo chamber fell in with this, but it is false and it won't succeed. A moment's objective reflection should be enough to convince any reasonable observer that the idea that the constitutionally elected President of the United States is a Nazi sympathizer, especially one who, whatever his foibles, has an unbroken record as an equal opportunity employer and has a family that's one-third Jewish, is an insane proposition. The founder of Black Lives Matter has compared Trump to Hitler and claims that he seeks genocide on the African on Negroes. The New York Times and the Washington Post have dutifully run op-ed pieces lyricizing Antifa as fighters for freedom and social justice. The Democrats, after decades of constructing a coalition built on identity politics, you know, that's blacks, Hispanics, the LGBTQ crowd, etc., are in bed with anti-white racists who extol violence and are bound to fall crashing into the ramparts of the American pan-ethnic, multi-racial national patriotism, which Donald Trump bestrides unchallenged. And that's true. And to see him in Houston holding up a black baby, participating and helping the rescue of all people. In fact, the population of Houston, if I'm informed correctly, is over 50% non-white. Lots of blacks and lots of Hispanics. Trump was basically reaching out and leading as the president should do. Since the British colonial ancestors of the original American whites brought the first Negro to the American colonies as slaves because of the southern states, because in the southern states, Negroes were productive harvesters of tropical plants such as cotton and tobacco, which is why there was very little slavery in Canada, except among the natives. A great comment by Conrad Black. There was very little slavery in Canada, almost none, except among the natives, where it was fairly widespread. Oh, don't hear about that too much, do we? That doesn't fit the anti-white motif. The present black militants can hardly emulate the Canadian native people and imply that the Americans of European ancestry have no right to be there. None of them have any interest in going back to Africa. But no, of course not. But these militant groups have forgotten that the demand of the previous civil rights generation, a recognition of the self-evident truth that all men are created equal. Well, I don't believe that's true, but okay. The power structure of America, including the majority of Negroes, will support the application of whatever level of force is necessary to preserve a civil society. The Democrats would be very imprudent to make common cause with Antifa, which has routinely beaten up peaceful pro-Trump meetings and parades and prevented reputable conservatives from fulfilling invitations to speak at universities, including people like Ann Coulter. Spurious investigations that were designed to impeach Trump go on producing an ever larger nothing burger. And the Clintons cower in silence over their legal vulnerability on the Hillary's emails and the Clinton Foundation's gargantuan pay-to-play casino. It is all nonsense, the feeble echo of an attempt to replicate in the United States the 2 minutes of hate of Emmanuel Goldstein in Orwell's novel 1984. In Canada, all that is needed is for someone of some public stature to demand that the endless, mindless deference to native blood libels against 95% of Canadians be replaced by the efficient application of legitimate grievances, no less and no more. Neither country has a societal death wish such as has afflicted much of Europe in the last century. He means the 20th century. And neither is in a European-style torpor. Both countries will work it out. Well, I hope he's right. But I don't see... I think the Europeans have fought back a lot more against the invasion than we have. The Front National and the change of our country in large measure by changes in population. I don't agree with everything that Conrad Black said, but certainly a very good lesson on the nonsense being perpetrated about Native right complaints of the Native Indians. We have been massively abused. This land was not stolen from the Indians. The Indians, on a coherent basis, never actually held it. Their civilization was deplorable, In fact, their lot was very, very neatly summarized by Thomas Hobbes when he described the life of primitive man as mean, nasty, brutish, and short. Mean, nasty, brutish, and short. They practiced slavery, incredible tortures of one another. In most cases, they barely managed to claw their way above bare subsistence, and in many cases, fell below that and simply perished from famine. When they weren't exterminating one another, they had no alphabet, they had no writing, they had no roads. Very, very backward. And we shouldn't have to kowtow to their descendants as if we owe them something. In fact, one of the best things that could ever be done would be to abolish the Indian Act and treat the natives, the Indians, as exactly the same as other Canadians, with the same rights, but no more. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow night, same time, midnight Eastern time. I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. Thank you.